The techniques that are taught in the fourth way are techniques to develop one's awareness so that if you work diligently using the methodology, you become more and more aware of just how asleep all of us are, and especially oneself. This was not a method of self-aggrandizement, but really a method to humble oneself when one confronts the fact that for most of our lives, most of the time we're asleep. And this, of course, is what Jung was teaching. And it's the basis of doing any kind of work, as far as I'm concerned, using Jungian teachings or any of the other teachings that we're going to cover in this class. It is really to make us aware of how asleep we are, not so that we can punish ourselves, but so that we could work very hard for moments of awakening. And there's a sort of a difficulty here when we start talking about self-awareness and being awake. And that is, when you talk about it, for a moment, you become awake. And so it's hard to believe that most of the time you're asleep. So it's been helpful to me in the course of the day to wake up occasionally, if that's granted to me, and realize how asleep I've been. Put me behind the wheel of my car, and unless I'm sitting on a bear trap, I fall asleep. And I'll go from wherever I'm starting out to wherever I end up, and I'll get out of the car and I'll think, now where was I? And preparing for this class has made it even more, make you even more aware of how much asleep you are. Okay, the name of the course is The Way of the Sly One, Psychology of Our Possible Evolution According to Gurdjieff, Uspensky, and Jung. The teachings of Gurdjieff and Uspensky are often called teachings of the fourth way. And they're called that because in both Search of the Miraculous and Psychology of Man's Possible Evolution, there are four ways of spiritual awakening that are discussed. There are three traditional ways and the fourth way, which is the way that's taught by Gurdjieff. The three ways of religious awakening are referred to as the way of the fakir or faker, the way of the monk, and the way of the yogi. Now, the way of the fakir is the way that relies on the physical body. Fakirs in India are those holy ones who take a position, for example, and don't move for 20 years. Or undergo tremendous physical austerities in order to achieve moments of awakening. Sometimes they won't eat for months and months or years and years at a time. Or they'll sit in dung or on ground that's very hard and they'll be without any clothing. It's a way that emphasizes austerity of the physical body. The way of the monk is a way that develops based on an emotional response to the divine. So the fakir works through the physical body, the monk works through the emotional aspect of the human being, and strives for devotion, especially devotion of love and feeling toward whatever is considered the God or the divine source. And the yogi is intellectual. It seeks to understand. It seeks to engage in practices that lead to an ever deeper awareness on a cognitive level of the source or the Godhead, if you will. Now, Gurdjieff and Uspensky refer to the way of the fakir as the first way, the way of the monk as the second way, and the way of the yogi as the third way. But each of these ways requires that we leave our ordinary life and go into a place or state of living that is apart from our ordinary way of life. So that each of these will lead to enlightenment if practiced diligently and sincerely. There's no doubt of that. But the difficulty with each of these is that it requires a complete separation of the one who practices it from one's daily life. So in fact, if awakening is achieved, and there's every possibility in each of these ways that it will be achieved, it's achieved apart from the collective. And the question of integrating back into the collective usually isn't even considered. It's the apartness that is almost championed in each of these. It's somehow that these methods set you apart from the collective. The fourth way is the way of the sly one. And the fourth way, the way of the sly one, works on the body the emotions and the intellect simultaneously within one's own life. One is reminded of the Buddha's teaching that in this very life, enlightenment can be achieved. The Way of the Sly One uses all of these methods and attempts to integrate them in the life that we are living now. Now, these three ways, the way of the fakir, the way of the monk, and the way of the yogi, point to different centers that we have. And this is another teaching of Gurdjieff and Ouspensky, the teaching about centers. We have a center that directs the movements of our body, our physical body, and that's called the moving center. And the way of the fakir is a way that emphasizes moving center. The way of the monk is a way that emphasizes emotional center or feeling center. And the way of the yogi is the way that emphasizes the intellectual center. And each of us, here's where we get into a little bit of typology. Each of us has a particular affinity for either the moving center, the emotional center, or the intellectual center. And so all of us at, you know, kind of at the start of our quest for inner awareness and awakening are either man number one, man number two, or man number three. Man number one is a man whose center of gravity, or whose most familiar center, is the moving center, which is the center that governs the physical body. Man number two is a man whose center of gravity or most comfortable center is the emotional center. And that covers emotional responses to life. And man number three is a man who is a person who is centered in the intellectual center. And we all generally fall into one of those three categories according to Gurdjieff's teaching. The way of the sly one seeks to move us from the level of I'll use man, but it could be man or woman, man number one, two, or three, to what is called in the work man number four, which is a transitional state . The teaching says that there actually are seven levels of humanity. Man number one, two, and three, which are listed here. Man number four, and then there's man number five, six, and seven. Now, rarely do you see in any of the teachings much discussion of man number five, six, and seven, because these teachings were very practical. And there's no point in us trying to discover, say, Gurdjieff and Ouspensky, what the characteristics are of man number seven, because most of us will never reach it. In fact, most of us will never even meet anybody who's at that level. There were no claims made by either Gurdjieff or Ouspensky themselves to be man number seven. Now, there was a lot of projection of that, of course, from the followers of these people, just as there were a lot of projections onto Jung. And so people are scandalized when we hear about Jung's private life, just as people were scandalized when they heard about Gurdjieff's private life. Ouspensky's private life seems to have been pretty conventional, but then he was a mathematician. And I can say that because so was I. See, I'm not, you know, casting stones without knowing what I'm talking about. You know, I'm not anymore. But those were calm years. Anyway. But people were shocked when they discovered, you know, sort of the secret life that Jung led, and everyone scandalized by it. Well, Jung really didn't make a whole lot of claims for himself as being this great, enlightened, all-conscious being. Neither did Gurdjieff or Ouspensky, but all three of them did permit and sometimes contribute to a sort of an aura of mystery about them. So there's a little bit of trickster, I think, in all of these people. But most of the work teaching centers on man number four, the transitional state, because all of the work seeks to bring us to the point where we are at the level of man number four. Now, in most of this is found in the book In Search of the Miraculous. And the teaching on the way of the sly one, or the fourth way, is found on page 48 to 50. And I just want to read a few lines from the book. The fourth way, it says, requires no retirement into the desert, does not require one to give up and renounce everything by which one formerly lived. The fourth way begins much further on than the way of the yogi. This means that a person must be prepared for the fourth way, and this preparation must be acquired in ordinary life and be a very serious one, embracing many different sides. Furthermore, a person must be living in conditions favorable for work on the fourth way, or in any case, conditions which do not render it impossible. It must be understood that both in the inner and in the external life of a person, there may be conditions which create insuperable barriers to the fourth way. Furthermore, the fourth way has no definite forms like the way of the fakir, the monk, and the yogi. And first of all, it has to be found. This is the first test. It is not as well known as the three traditional ways. There are many people who have never heard of the fourth way, and there are others who deny its existence or possibility.